platform.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Our intro was already played before, so we missed it, Miss Diane.
I guess so, and that's really the highlight of the whole evening, just so you know.
It is, but so now goodbye, everybody, because we're just thrown off by that. So, but anyway, okay.
Yeah.
So tonight, it's Diana on deck here,
and
we have Miss Diane King, and we have Uncle Murray there in the top right corner here. Uncle Murray, I'm demoting you to the bottom shelf. You're on the bottom shelf right now.
I gotta work my way up there. Yeah, you got that right.
That's See, I'm sorry. You know,
if
one of us is missing, then you will go up there. Okay, but in the meantime, Uncle Murray, I just want to update everybody and let them know Jim has had his surgery. And he's doing well. If Miss Diane, if you want to just give a little update, and I can show the picture that I did some editing to, Miss Diane.
Just a minute.
Look at this. We're live, and I have to wait.
No. Absolutely. I just got a message from Jim. Said the guy ICU again. They think it's you. It was me. He listens to the show, Jim says, so just be careful what we say, not to do specific.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So we're not gonna do anything specific. So what I am going to do though, Miss Diane, is I did a little editing. Okay, and I will show you, hopefully I can show you the little editing that I did. And you'll say, how did she do that?
How did you do it?
Boy, she is just so amazing.
And talented. Yep.
That she could do this editing. Let's see if I can get this up. Can you see that, Miss Diane?
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely can see it.
You see the editing that I did? Do you notice I took out identifiable information?
Oh, very good.
Yes.
Like that? Yes. Oh,
I got rid of the doctor's name. You like that? So this is actually for everybody out there. And thank you for joining us. And I didn't say that we are on Speak Free radio and video every Saturday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right after Ryan Massano. So this is a picture of the surgery that Jim had. And you can see that's his cute little heart. And for people who don't believe that he has a heart, he does. It's right here. You can see the cute little picture. And he had what's called a redo sternotomy. And
Cabbage.
It says sternotomy.
That would have to be done if you're going to reopen it up again. Yes.
Call it a redo, Miss Diane.
Right.
Okay. So let's just go in here. And so look, they did some bypasses. Look at the cute little bypasses they did for Jim. So you can see this. So he had a redo sternotomy.
It looks like a highway network.
Look at that. Yeah, so that's his aorta there, right? This ascending.
I don't know. I'm assuming so, yeah.
And there's his heart. And looks like that's how they did the bypasses. Mm-hmm. It looks like they put those in there. They have some going out the other side. Let me just see if I can make this bigger for everybody. You can see that, right, Miss Diane?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
If you know anything about the heart and your editing is primo. By the way, that's absolutely just pristine. Absolutely.
You like
fantastic.
That?
Fantastic. Okay. By the way, you know the heart has seven sides, you know?
Seven.
If you spin it fast enough, I guess you could be.
Okay, well, there's Jim, and he's doing well. So, Miss Diane, do you want to give a little update? About Jim?
You know, I'm a bit spooked right now, but
don't say where he is.
No,
just
I'm
say
not.
he's doing well.
Yeah, he apparently. Just a sec. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there's Henry. Miss Diane, we are live right now.
I know.
Hey, Henry.
So, And then we have Henry there. So Henry, Jim had his surgery, and Miss Diane is, I think, texting somebody, but he's doing very well.
Jim is telling me one thing, and that he's going against some things that he's already said. And anyway,
we give him a pass, okay? But Henry, just so you know, I just showed the picture. Jim indeed has a heart. He does have a heart. I know people don't think he has a heart, but right, Jim right. has a heart. It's actually been verified by a doctor, OR staff, etc. But he's doing very well, and we're all happy. We're very, very much relieved. He had the surgery, believe it or not, on Juneteenth.
Yeah.
No.
Yes. Imagine that.
Wow.
How can you?
Now that's scary.
Uncle Murray, think about this, right? I've had surgery before. Other people might have had surgery. Do you remember the date? No, he can say I had it on Juneteenth, 2024. He'll remember that.
Imagine that. Huh? That's awesome. Yep. That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, so Miss Diane is in the process of texting Jim.
Oh, it's hopeless. You don't want to talk with somebody who has just come out of surgery and is somewhat of convalescence. It's hopeless.
Yes, he is a convalescent. So let's shift gears, okay, to something a little more hopeful. Henry, speaking of things that begin with an H, hopeful Henry. Right? Henry.
Hopeful Henry. Horrible Henry.
No, hopeful Henry.
Hopeful Henry. Henry.
How was your day, and what havoc with an H did you wreak on upon people?
It was pretty mild. I'm gonna cut and paste here if I'm successful. This little video. I had a run in with a Jewish guy. It wasn't a run in. It was, but you can play it. It's only a couple of seconds. 30 seconds or so. And Miss Diane, I have to ask your apology or say I'm sorry, because I said the N-word, and you might.
Are you asking me to apologizing to me? You don't have to do that.
Well,
with what I hear, are you kidding?
You call somebody nice, Henry?
Mm-hmm.
I use the word Nazi.
Oh, that word.
Oh, yeah, that word.
Oh, okay. You're forgiven. I know it's tough to move out of things you're used to. So
you'll see this film. I just thought that this guy wasn't going to hang around long enough for me to say National Socialists. So it was two syllables versus
I get
that
it.
One.
Yeah, it's attention span.
Let me see. I got to click the button here.
Henry, send me the BitChute channel, and let me get that queued in. And okay, so was. Today? Was this today, Henry?
Yes, this was today.
Okay. So you are out. Beautiful day, it looks like.
Yeah, and it's the same area. I mean, Diane will recognize it. It was the area where she stood. And, you know.
Is this it?
That's it.
Okay. Something
you might get an advertising. You have to wait.
Yeah, let me know.
Something like that.
I got to dismiss this. That's what's going on here. I want to try to make this bigger. Well, let's play this and see what happens here, okay?
Yeah.
One simple and brilliant trick to cool your home in minutes. Tired of hot and stuffy rooms during summer? And former NASA engineer from Houston.
There we go.
If you are planning to support Trump in 2024, you can't miss out on this exclusive Trump lighter.
Okay.
Now, this compact Trump.
I've had it. There we go.
You can't help what they advertise.
Okay.
Behind these signs.
Pardon?
Are you behind these signs?
Yes.
No, you're in front of them.
Yes. Do you have any evidence?
I can add to your criticism of Israel, but I cannot support the Holocaust denial.
But what evidence do you have that the Nazis used gas chambers to kill Jews?
My family was infected.
Oh,
were they in gas chambers?
That.
What camp?
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Come on, guy.
That's right.
To cry. Let him.
Yeah, he was. His family was impacted. You know, I mean, I think that's a, that there you go. You ask people questions and they walk away.
They can't handle discussion. They can't handle the truth.
Yeah. So it's just like, you know, you just, I don't know, keep banging my head against the wall, but it's a worthy wall. And
I agree.
Seems like the right thing to do. And the other video I have for you guys, because I guess you all didn't see my visual report because I don't have all your emails, but and I write one once every 6 weeks or 8 weeks. But this is.
Can I ask you a question, Henry, before you continue?
Sure.
So that man that you saw, was this the first time you have seen him?
Yes.
Okay. So he was in support of the signs when it came to Israel. So that's kind of interesting.
Well, you know, if he was really in support of that, he could have joined us any time. And, you know, we've been there 20 years. It's only been in the last 5, I think, that we started recognizing that the Holocaust is the key to Palestinian liberation. And it's a worthy topic. And since people are being put in prison because of it, it underscores the worthiness of going there. So if he really believed, you know, if he was a townie, if he was an Ann Arbor person, which I believe he was.
Oh, I see.
You know, he could have joined us at any time. And they don't. It's all talk. It's the old same. When I first started protesting in front of a synagogue, you know, I was told that I was going to alienate exactly those people that could help me the most. And I decided that was bullshit and just kept on. You know, that I just said, you know, if they really feel like I do, they'll be out here. You know, and today, you know, I confided to Chris a little bit. You know, it's just like, I want to ask, and I'm not going to do this, but I did think of it this morning that I should go on to Facebook and say to all the people of Southeast Michigan, people within a 30, 40 mile range of where we are, you know, what's it going to take on Israel's part, on their actions, on their genocide, on their barbaric behavior? What's it going to take for them to ramp up to cause you to come out here and stand against the state of Israel with us? And I'm probably not going to do that, but the videos coming out of Palestine are just too horrific. I can't watch them anymore, and I don't do it anymore. And so it's a you know, but I don't know what it's going to take. Last night, there's this quote anti-war protest in downtown Ann Arbor. And I went there because they're, I think, in my views, they're, you know, they're all for peace, of course, but they don't want to work for peace, and that's very frustrating. But at least they stand on the sidewalk, and there was 9 of them, and I invited them all to come to the vigil and stand with us, like Miss Diane did, and you know, we get nobody. Maybe
I came a long ways, Henry. You know that, right?
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Well,
you
saw, all the way from near Toledo.
But you saw the you saw my visual report. You saw your glowing image.
Oh, that was really sweet of you. You should have put your picture up there too.
Yeah. No, it was you. Well, the other thing I did, Diana, was Tuesday, and this cracks me up. I spoke at City Council. And we know who runs this town, but Monday is the day the city council usually meets. They didn't meet on Monday because they were honoring the holiday of Eid, an Islamic holiday. And I know who's behind that. You know, it's the Jews that are behind that because they're saying to their their Muslim victims, they're saying, oh, look. We're your friend. We're going to promote Eid Day. And so by allowing the Muslims to have their own day where city council won't meet, then all the Jewish holidays that come down the pike, you know, they'll also skate on that. So it's kind of like they buoy themselves as they pretend to buoy the Muslims that are in the area. Anyhow, that's the link there, Diana, to my
city address, council,
my address of city Good. Council.
It's only and about this, 3 minutes. Yeah.
It's exactly 3 minutes, and it's taken from my camera, so you can see the council people, the people that we pay to represent us, turn their backs on me, and some even leave the room. You can watch them as I speak and address the council. This is taken from my GoPro camera.
Can that be brought up?
I had to go through two ads.
And, that's right. Okay, I forgot about that.
I saved everybody. I pre-added. Okay. So it's all ready now.
Okay? Oh, that's good. Okay.
I got it all ready. Okay. Are we ready to watch this, Henry? When was this?
This past Tuesday, the 18th.
Yeah. It was the eve of Juneteenth.
Yeah. Thank goodness for Juneteenth. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, so here we go. On the eve of, this is HH, on the eve.
Note the man on the left there in the yellow shirt, the older guy. He's my friend. That gentleman there is named Alan Haber. His father was the dean of the Literature, Science, and Arts School at the University of Michigan many moons ago. Alan's been a self-professed peace activist. He's Jewish. He attends a Orthodox synagogue. And he's someone I would love to hate, but he's just so damn nice. and I'll speak more about him after you see what's see here. And in fact, at the end of my talk, you can look and see that he actually gives me a high sign, and nobody else does.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
Well, here we go. Here we go.
Our next speaker is...
I know him.
Good evening. From the text supplied to Ann Arbor High School students, we read, Jews who were selected for death were told to undress for a shower and then led into a chamber with fake shower heads. After the doors were closed, cyanide gas poured from the shower heads. The teacher may suggest that the student check out the trademark name for hydrogen cyanide, then Zyklon B, and the student might turn to Wikipedia for information. He will read, the product is notorious for its use by Nazi Germany during the Holocaust to murder 1.1 million people in gas chambers installed at Auschwitz-Birkenau, Majdanek, and other extermination camps, end quote. British author and former professor at University College London, Nicholas Kollerstrom, disagrees. In his book, Breaking the Spell, he clearly admits the presence of gas chambers in these camps, but also clearly differentiates between the real fumigation gas chambers and the claimed homicidal gas chambers. Typhus was the real killer of Jews, and the National Socialists were determined to minimize this disease, which is carried by lice. Zyklon B was the fumigant used in this process of disinfecting clothing and bedding for the inmates in this camp. To distinguish between the real and claimed gas chambers, Kollerstrom quotes from studies done by engineer Fred Leuchter, followed by chemist Germar Rudolph, and finally by the Polish government themselves. These studies examined the blue staining in the walls of the fumigation gas chambers and compared them with the walls of the alleged homicidal gas chambers. The results in all three cases were clear. The blue staining left by applications of Zyklon B was clearly notable in the fumigation chambers. In fact, the staining even penetrated through the walls, but was evident in only trace amounts in the alleged homicidal gas chambers. Kollerstrom additionally provides graphs which show inmate deaths decreased with increased shipments of Zyklon B to the camps, not increased, as the Holocaust narrative would have us believe. If Holocaust education is to mean anything, it is to separate truth from fiction. It is hoped our students get the opportunity to question both sides. Thank you.
That chance.
So, you know, what's interesting about that video, Henry, is that what, three or four of those women on the left-hand side, they turn their backs on you?
Yes.
Do they do that all the time?
Yes, and just for me. There are speakers there. One, there's a Jew that speaks. He used to be my friend, and his wife is Iranian, and they get up and they just scream epithets at the city council people. They call them dogs. They call them inhumans. They call them everything under the sun, and they never get their back turned.
Really?
You know, they never get the councilmen to turn their backs.
Yeah.
So it's only
they're witches. I think that's why they're reacting that way.
it's like kryptonite to them. So the one woman who turned her back is my own councilwoman, and her name is Erica Briggs. And she said about 5 minutes after I spoke, she said, quote, "I would just like to acknowledge how ghastly the last public comments were from the last speaker, and it was disturbing to listen to. So I hope we don't hear a repeat of that." Like, she's going to lecture me, right? Mm-hmm. She's going to wag her fingers as I hope you know, like I'm a school child. So I wrote her, and I'm trying to be serious. I never disrespect the people at council. So I wrote her an email, and I said, "Dear Erica, I don't doubt that you felt my comments were ghastly and disturbing on Tuesday. I was speaking of a matter on a municipal interest, and that is possible misinformation being supplied to our high school students on state-mandated Holocaust education. Since I spoke only on a short review of Nick Kollerstrom's book that countered the standard narrative of the Holocaust, I wonder why my comments provoked such reactions from yourself. Could you please take a minute to explain? Why do you find my comments so disturbing? If you prefer an in-person discussion, please just let me know where and when." And I signed my name. And there's no evidence she's going to respond to me. But it's just an amazing topic of all topics to have people turn their back on you and to have the mayor. Of course, the mayor is a non-Jewish person, but he married a Jewish person, which makes it even worse. And so, you know, he has told me that I was beneath contempt. Other council people have called me loathsome. and I've never called them names. It's just not the way I'm going to roll on this. And they need to, maybe eventually they will learn. But the orange shirted man, Alan Haber, he's always pressing for this and that. And that particular night, he spoke about reparations for Black people, not realizing that he should realize that only Jews get reparations. Alan, you know, you're going to bark up an empty tree on this one. But there's also the Black man who was to the right of the podium, and so my camera didn't pick her up, but she turned her back as well. Anyhow, he wrote her and blind copied me an email that said that, he talked about how supportive she is about Black reparations, and he was, and he talked about the 1960s and the Freedom Riders with her. And then his final paragraph was that I, Alan, was disappointed in you, the councilwoman, for turning your back on Henry Herskovitz. Because he's there just to, you know, provide information that we otherwise wouldn't know. And I thought that was a very nice thing to do. So part of the reason I went yesterday downtown to the protest, the anti-war protest, was to shake his hand. I thought that was just a nice thing for him to do. And his wife was there, she was shocked when I told them that the IDF soldiers spoke at the synagogue. She couldn't believe it. So I just sent her the link to the article that explains that. So these are the things that I deal with here. That was the only discussion I had with that man who couldn't believe that I would challenge the Holocaust narrative, the gas chamber narrative specifically. And Other than that, it was a day. I think the score was 21-9. Is that right? We'll have to.
And what's that score? What is that score?
The score is Chris counts the gestures of support, and we call them thumbs, as in thumbs up, and the gestures of disapproval, which is the fingers. So it's the thumbs versus the fingers, and the thumbs always win.
Oh, well, that's good.
I think we've lost once. But today's score was 21-9, 21 gestures of approval, like waves and honks and thumbs up, and 9 gestures of negativity. And you know, the sign I carry today is my usual sign that says, where's your loyalty? And there's like a voting square, America, another voting square, Israel. I'm getting the finger for holding a sign like that, and I'm carrying my American flag. These are people that are just they can't express themselves. They don't stop their car and have a conversation, which we're willing to do, or at least I'm willing to do. Chris, you know, if you go negative on Chris, he's going to let you have it, and there's going to be no forgiveness from that boy. But you know, and that's why I love him. And we play this good cop, bad cop routine where he'll say, Henry will talk to you, but I'm not going to talk to you, you know? So these are the things that we do.
So I just want to show you, this is Erica Briggs. She defines herself as a progressive Democrat, i.e. communist.
Yeah.
That's her. So, I just wanted to show you that.
Yeah.
Anything else to report there, Henry?
Not from Ann Arbor, not from the little glass bubble where you can get tampons in the men's rooms.
That's really good to know.
Terrific. Terrific.
Horrific. Yeah, exactly.
Horrific.
Do I need to know anything more about Jim?
Yes. Miss Diane, did you want to say anything more?
He is... in the process, I'm not even sure what to say, but the point is, he, like you said, he's doing well to the extent that the doctor that stepped in for the other doctor today felt that he might be able to go home on Tuesday.
Wow.
Excellent.
A lot will have to happen before that happens, but it's very possible, I suppose.
Is he in the ICU still?
Yep.
He is. Okay. Yep.
So, Miss Diane, Henry, excuse me for that, but do you mind if I just mention the call to the hospital or no?
No.
Okay.
We don't want to encourage that sort of thing.
Okay.
And it will only encourage, so I appreciate that. Okay. I can talk to Henry privately. We can talk privately on that. And what have Kath, but not on the, Jim said be careful on talking on the broadcast.
Okay. Sure. I just want to put out a little PSA. Okay. Miss Diane is in control and she's all good with Jim and what's going on. She's taking care of business. Okay. So the only thing she needs from anybody is their support and their prayers.
That's right.
And that's it.
Yeah, now advice isn't really helpful.
Yes.
Now my medical daughters have been able to provide some advice that have been helpful, because when you're in the biz, you know what to look for. So that's been helpful. But to indicate certain dietary things, that isn't terribly helpful right now, particularly when Jim doesn't like the food that's being recommended. Not to mention that he's just starting to get back to eating. And he hasn't eaten basically something, 3 or 4 days. So he's got to get the system back working. And it hasn't been working. So how do you like my new parrot?
Henry, you were going to say something else.
If I was, I've forgotten it.
I totally sympathize.
You'll get to be my age one of these days, too.
And that is not surprising whatsoever.
Look at the little parrot. Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah, she's chewing my hair. Yeah,
that's wonderful. So Miss Diane is going to go over the book,
yep.
6 Million. Fact yep. or fiction. Fact and Henry, if you want to, yep. I don't know if you want to hang around for that. Uncle Murray, before we segue into the next segment with Miss Diane, did you want to make any comments about what Henry's been up to?
Absolutely. Listen, Henry, great work, by the way. Let's just say the Holocaust, right? I think around 2008, I was doing a Room 8 piece, right? And ran to some stuff. I didn't know what I knew then. And then I heard about Fred Luther. I looked up Fred Luther and looked up his evidence, right? And then I realized, wow, there were no gas chambers. Guys, you know, Jim says it all the time, and I agree with that, right? But I want to get it through your heads. There were no functioning gas chambers in Germany whatsoever.
During no World homicidal War extermination gas chambers, right?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing, okay? So understand from there, all right? You have to understand the story is not as what they've been telling you. It's absolutely not. So add to that the wooden doors, and the whole thing just becomes farcical.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. It's farcical. So great work on this, Henry. There's no reason not to stand your ground on this when it comes to this. All right. I mean, there's absolutely no reason. They have to provide some information, not just epithets. It's pretty ridiculous that you have to put up with that, right? But of course, they can never explain their epithets, right? They'll just scream them and accept it. Yeah, expect them
to just go. Uncle Murray, Diane came all the way from Texas to stand with me. Where are you? Maybe you can come down and drop by.
That was awesome.
Sorry about that.
She came from Texas.
Well, it's, you know, maybe Miss Diane and Henry can talk about other things, too, including that question that Henry just asked. Right, Uncle Murray?
That's correct.
That is correct.
I had an opportunity to come at the same time you were having, so it was twofer, having your demonstration. Uncle Murray might not be so lucky.
I understand. No, I'm just giving Uncle Murray
a hard time. Yeah.
No worries. It's
Well, you're probably wondering. Henry, you're probably wondering about my thumbnail, right? It's probably a little weird. Now, I didn't want you to really pay attention to the things on the outside. I want everyone to pay attention to the middle. The middle, guys, is a picture of the five dancing Israelis on the rooftop. Now, you never saw it because the FBI has sequestered this for over 24 years.
Okay. Almost
24 years, right?
That's
Did you notice what they're wearing? Hey, guys, you notice what they're wearing? They're wearing women's bikinis. Why are they wearing women's bikinis, okay?
There's only four of them.
One's out of the picture or taking pictures of them. You know, they're about to pose for the lighter picture. Lighter picks in front of the World Trade Center.
Wow.
Yeah.
And who released this? Who released this photo?
Looks like HT. Looks like John Medeo. That's HT on the bottom right.
That's HT. It was during one of his broadcasts, and he was playing an InfoWars piece. So Alex Jones, I believe, he gets credit at least for posting this. I haven't seen this anyplace else. It might have been a Greg Reese report, but I'm not entirely sure.
Wow. That's pretty interesting.
Well, not what I thought.
Good. Well, you know, that's interesting, Miss Diane.
Well, it's not on the roof, for one thing. Well, it doesn't look like it is anyway. But
what's a roof?
That's a roof.
Oh, a roof.
I know. Jim says the same thing. A roof.
A roof. What's roof. A roof?
Roof.
Roof. Okay. Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that, Miss Uncle Murray and Miss Diane. Yeah. Are you going to?
Whenever you're ready.
I'm ready. I'm going to pull it up. And I just want to remind everybody that you can get this book and others at moneytreepublishing.com. And if you use the word hoax, you will get 10% off of your purchase. And there you go, Miss Diane. You are on.
All right. Thank you. Chapter 18, Bergen-Belsen. It originated as a POW camp in northwestern central Germany, located just north of the city of Hanover. It was originally considered Stalag 11C. It was converted into a concentration camp in 43 on the orders of SS Reichsfuhrer Heinrich Himmler as a part of a program to exchange Jews for German POWs held by the Allies. This program resulted in just over 2,000 Jews being exchanged before it was halted due to the course of the war. And I don't think the Allies felt it was worth it, to be honest with you. The nature of the camp, however, changed in March 44 when a new section was established for sick male prisoners from other concentration camps who were no longer able to work. A section for female prisoners was established in August 44, and I believe that's where supposedly Anne Frank and her sister died of typhus. The establishment of a camp specifically for the care of sick prisoners is noteworthy because Holocaust hoaxer storytellers often claim that concentration camp inmates too sick to work or gassed or otherwise exterminated. Evacuations from other camps caused overcrowding in Bergen-Belsen in 44, and the nature of the camp changed again in December of 44. Bergen-Belsen became the destination for numerous evacuation transports from other concentration camps as the SS began to evacuate camps close to the Eastern Front. Tens of thousands of prisoners were relocated to central Germany, with the SS keen to preserve as many of their labor resources as possible. Consequently, at least 85,000 people were transported to Bergen-Belsen on more than 100 transports starting in December of 44, and a camp that could not sustain that. Auschwitz was likely larger than Bergen-Belsen, and their maximum capacity should have been 10,000, but they went into 50,000 and more. Simultaneously, the camp administration struggled to manage the breakdown in supply chains due to the disruptive Allied bombing campaign. Food, medicine, and of particular importance, ironically, shipments of lice exterminating Zyklon B were severely disrupted. As a result, a typhus outbreak began following the ensuing lice infestation, which was exacerbated by the overcrowding. Typhus deaths, origin of horror images of emaciated bodies. That's what happens to bodies and people when they get typhus. They get, it's almost like dysentery, it's a dehydration, and starvation. They can't process their food. Largely because a significant Western media contingent accompanied the British soldiers and thus had immediate access to the entire camp, the camp surroundings were comprehensively documented. And of course, we know those would be the true stories. There were two outcomes from this extensive media presence. Firstly, the photographs and film footage they captured of those inmates who had died or were dying of typhus became some of the most iconic images representing the Holocaust, often misidentified as gassing victims. They can say whatever they want for these victims. And secondly, the thorough documentation of the camp ensured it was impossible to assert that a gas chamber even existed at Bergen-Belsen. According to camp records, approximately 35,000 inmates succumbed to the disease between January and April of 45. When the British arrived, around 13,000 bodies remained unburied. It is these corpses photographed being buried and pushed in a mass grave dug after the British occupation, bulldozed by the British, that have become synonymous with the Holocaust. About 55,000 other inmates were rescued and relocated after undergoing delousing. So it's obviously misrepresenting. The entire camp, okay, at one point, British incinerated Bergen-Belsen camp to try to contain typhus epidemic. The entire camp was set ablaze using flamethrowers mounted on British Army Bren carriers to eradicate the remaining lice. Bergen-Belsen represents a profound and grievous irony. The lice infestation spiraled out of control because the Germans could not deliver sufficient quantities of Zyklon B to the camp due to Allied bombings. A significant number of deaths at Bergen-Belsen can thus be attributed to the absence of Zyklon B, not the presence at the camp, which contradicts a traditional extermination narrative. It's further ironic that the harrowing scenes of death observed at Bergen-Belsen were not a result of any gas chambers, yet are still used by the Holocaust storytellers to prove that genocide occurred. They've got a spin. They're spinmeisters on this. The Belsen trial of 45. The British occupation authorities acted promptly in arresting as many of the camp's administrative staff as they could. Of the 77 arrests made, 17 had succumbed to typhus by the end of May. Again, I guess proving that point. Most of the eyewitnesses contradicted themselves during the cross-examination, which some could not identify the defendants when prompted. But that never seemed to matter to the particular trials. In other words, they were not charged with specific crimes, but just for being in charge. A lot of them were charged for being in charge when prisoners died of typhus, a situation which the Allied bombing had caused. Regardless of these facts, and despite many of the defendants only arriving at Bergen-Belsen after February 45 and others arriving just 2 days before the British occupation, the judges handed death sentence to 11 defendants. The Belsen trial therefore stands out perhaps even more than the primary trials at Nuremberg as a judicial scandal driven more by animosity and vengeance than by any genuine pursuit of justice or seeking the facts, ma'am, in the details of the, of these trials. Not much about the next one, Sachsenhausen, but this was about Bergen-Belsen. And if this is the camp that Jim had done a video on death by meal, at Bergen-Belsen, the British thought that they would attempt to deal with the starvation of the prisoners by feeding them heavily fat and caloric food. They killed more people this way than the Germans ever could have done or were had died under German control. And I think it was Bergen-Belsen. You can't feed starving people heavy fat food. You have to begin to introduce. Well, British didn't do that. And I'd be surprised. Where did they get the good tasting food? They don't have that in England. Did they bring it in from other countries? I don't know. Probably from Germany. They can't feed starving people sausages.
Right. Well, they can't. Their bodies aren't acclimated to those.
They killed over 7,000 people. They killed way more than had died under the German occupation, German forces in a Bergen-Belsen administration. The British just really made a name for themselves in this type of how you kill someone. You starve them first and then you feed them fatty foods. That's a good idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, thanks, Henry. Have a great night. Thanks again.
Thanks, Henry. Bye, guys. Be good.
Hi, Henry.
You too. This whole thing gets a racket, guys. This whole thing is a bloody racket. I mean,
of course it is. It's a cash cow, and they have to keep it going. And the reason why they come against us is because we're attacking their shrine and their god. The god being the Holocaust, and the Holocaust is the ka-ching of their existence. So that's why they come after us. Well, the InfoWars is the battleground because that's where they could win it or lose it.
And well, I think they've lost. They've lost the InfoWar. They really have to beat us, and I don't think they can.
Oh, they can because they're in charge of everything. All they have to do is tweak the law a little bit and because there's no regard or oath, really, to our Constitution. Even the Bill of Rights, even our freedom of speech, things still come after us. They just are a little bit hesitant to do so.
No, they're flouting the law. The law doesn't mean anything anymore.
That's right.
And see, that's one of the mistakes they made. See, people are realizing that no, you can't wait for the law to do anything because they're not going to do anything. If anything, they're going to come after you for causing a fuss. So you need to take care of business, you know? And once again, we don't advocate any kind of violence or anything of the sort.
No.
We're also not stupid, and we're not going to stand around with our thumbs up our butts and let things happen where they want to happen.
They can orchestrate it any way they want at any time. Well, Diana and I are going through Revelations, and the key crime and the key determining factor is the individual's faith in the testimony of Jesus Christ. And amen. If you abide by that, that's a death penalty. That's also, by the way, in the Noahide laws. It's kind of a subtext of that, by the way. And so I can definitely see a parallel or a crossover between the two.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they're working. See, they work in tandem to get these things going, right? It's the playmakers right behind the scenes, and then they're Shabbos Goyim, right? The Sionim, and and the Judeo-Christian dupes, the guys who read the Scofield reference Bible.
Yeah, for sure.
And get fooled by the faulty Genesis 12:1-3, you know?
Misunderstanding it, because then they don't read Galatians, which talks about the seed of Abraham as Jesus Christ. And I was listening to Exodus today, very, very strident and stringent rules, but they don't, and of course about the Passover and stuff, they don't understand. This is a precursor that they don't read the rest of the story. And if they read it, they don't accept it. The rest of the story is where Jesus Christ becomes, as we read in Revelation, the Lamb of God. That's the Passover Lamb. Everything. And if you were to go through the Bible, starting in Genesis, and start noting the things that are precursors for the Messiah, you'd have a long study there.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, see, they treat the Bible like a Burger King menu.
I remembered. What was it that I was thinking of and that was not particular, that was not the case in the scriptures, but was the case in the Talmud? And I thought, well, the Talmud held full sway after the captivity. They brought it with them during the captivity of Babylon, and they held on to it for that 400 years of silence. That's where the Talmud was kind of constructed and developed and so on. Right. And so it replaces whatever is said in the Torah.
Most people don't know what the Talmud is. Most people do not know. I'm going to interrupt for a second. Remind everybody. I don't know why. And I did text Dave Gaheri, but the chat in Speak Free video doesn't even come up anymore. So I don't think it's a matter that it's not working, but for some reason, so
sabotaged.
If you are watching on Speak Free video, go to the comment section underneath the video, and it'll say Hoax Busters, and then it has comment section. And I just put the date, 6/22/24. And if you want to chat with us and you want to come in on StreamYard, there's a link there. And this link is only good for tonight. The links change every week. So if you want to come in and chat with us, just copy that StreamYard link, put it into a browser, and then you'll get to us. But other than that, there's no way to chat with people. I want to thank you. I know you're all there. I can see you, and I know you can see us, but I can't see your comments. Yeah. Okay. And Reese is in the green room, and I'm gonna bring Reese in.
Absolutely. And I'm trying to get his contact information because Jim had wanted to, after their conversation last week, wanted to talk with Reese, but on the phone, not on Hoax Busters. And then he went into the hospital, so I thought I'd go ahead and get that information for him when he's able to.
Hello, Reese. Welcome,
hey,
Reese.
Hello, especially Diane. You picked up the Talon and are running with it for Jim, huh?
I've been talking with him ever since I learned that he and Joe were hooked on this buzzard person. That was and it wasn't just the Jehovah's Witnesses. It's this buzzard person that was totally defying almost everything scripturally. And of course, you can't take them both on. So, and I had done that once. I said, I'm not going to do that again, because then they come in like
buzzards, like buzzards.
From each side.
By the way, I see there's Diane and Diana.
Yep,
I believe.
Yep.
Yes.
That had me a little confused. So just so I'm not confused between the two of you, what's the difference between the two Dianes?
Nothing.
Diana's prettier.
No, that's not true. So.
Oh, yes, so, it is. Jim's partner. Diana exactly. With one N is Jim's partner.
With two N's is just some woman that is in the background. And then when Jim's not here, they bring me to the forefront.
Yeah, force you into service.
Force me into service.
It's like stop loss in the military. When we need you, we bring you in, whether you want to be discharged or not.
Well, I want to be discharged.
We need you. Sorry.
Jim, I could assure him he's in good hands, because I've heard you before, Diane. You're very well informed. And present a very powerful case.
He's totally resistant to the things that I say. The only thing I can trust is that Isaiah 55, the word of God will not return void. it will accomplish that what it for what it's sent.
Well,
and that and so that's what I'm counting on. And
Diane,
you were right. You were right about one thing.
What's that? Tell me what I was right about.
You can take the boy out of the Jehovah's Witnesses, but it's tough to take Jehovah's Witnesses out of the boy.
And that was exactly my point.
I know. You came through. I wish you hadn't talked about Christmas. I wish you had talked about Jesus Christ. That is the focal point.
Yeah, but he brought it up. So, mm-hmm. you know, when he brings it up, look, I am well equipped to discuss those things and to debate. I'm well informed. I'm not a lot like a lot of these people that call into talk radio that are half baked. They really don't know what they're talking about. They read about something in a blog, and they think they know. I've done the in-depth study on these subjects. But without going into that, because I did want to speak to Jim about Christmas, that is, I wanted to speak to the Grinch and see if I can make his heart grow.
Not possible.
Well, the thing is, I just want to cut in. We did verify this week on Juneteenth, actually, that Jim does have a heart. It's been verified by multiple people in the OR of a Texas hospital. So it has been verified. Okay, so that's the first thing. So, okay, get that off the table. Number two, okay, and Jim, speaking of number two, does not like people to shit on his kitchen floor. So we will. It's probably better to have this chat with Jim.
I agree, he doesn't have a chance to
he's listening. Could be listening, and he can't defend himself.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah,
just making sure.
I want to hear his defense. I want to hear his defense, and I'm gonna counter offense with actual facts of history. That I could tell you for many years, I did a broadcast myself for over 10 years, mostly targeted it towards Jehovah's Witnesses and the cults. All right?
Yeah.
So I could tell you that virtually all, I could say 99% of the people that I engaged in a discussion or a debate didn't know any of the real historical facts behind the pagan December 25th Christmas is a reinvention of Saturnalia. Yeah. Or Sol Invictus. They don't even know the historical facts. They're just parroting what they
heard. We're still talking about it.
I would like to
say this in absentia, in absentia of Jim. I don't want to say too much, but I will say this. I am an expert on the Jehovah's Witnesses. Not any author that has written books on the Jehovah's Witnesses knows more about that cult than I do. And that includes James Penton Fritz Springmeier, you know, who actually I was very shocked when I found out how little depth of knowledge Fritz Springmeier had on the occult connection to the Jehovah's Witnesses.
With that, since it's almost the 9 o'clock hour, I'm going to play a song.
Commercial time.
I'm actually going to play a song.
Okay.
That it's one of my favorites. Jim hates it, so Jim, this one's for you. and then we'll have a commercial break, and then we'll get right into what Reese is doing in New York City. Okay. I expect everybody to tap their feet, clap their hands, and sing. Not necessarily in that order. Okay?
Depends on the song, Diane.
I love this song. I love it. It's a wonderful song. Here we go.
I've got a great one. Go ahead.
Foundering. This is Foundering. I love this.
Oh, yeah.
You always know when you get close to the Viper's Den, because you can hear them screaming. Don't even jest, or the hornet's nest will descend upon you with a shock and awe. They fudge the scores, they fund the wars, it's howling you in Waterloo. It's protocol to hoax it all like the pathogenic menace they design. Don't
mind everybody.
These lying eyes, there's no conspiracy, comprised of lies, and history's alibis. This timeline isn't right. We rule the land with mighty
hands
and mighty
hearts.
Call me Machine, noticing the trend. There are certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead. Go close my line, that being a Caucasian is fine. Prepare to be filleted alive, and if you try to claim that space is vacant gay, they'll greet you with obscene green sounds. Careful, don't say that boys wearing skirts playing sports against your daughters is retarded. It's only a fad when every single ad depicts diversity in every home. Remember, we used to try to assemble and occupy, but they dangled us the trope of social justice. Woke sells quite well, it's also a spell, cause NPCs can see beyond the veil. Don't believe these blind eyes, there's no conspiracy, comprised of lies and mysteries, alibis. Steinbein is a genius. We rule the land with mighty hands of flesh. Noticing the truth, there are certain things you cannot say, so sing them all instead. Shut it down, you're showing now good luck. We are the techno Pharisees, you're just a bunch of schmucks. It's hard not to connect when sizing up our lot. But it's been stacked, so just relax here. Have a muzzle talk.
I couldn't resist. I couldn't resist.
It's way too
Diane, deep. You know what would have made that a lot better?
What?
If you had a video playing in the background of the Chabad Lubavitchers doing their dances.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That would have been
That would drive the humor home, yes. That's for sure.
I just want to tell you, that's Foundering, and that particular version is a little fast. It's on a faster speed. So there are a couple of different versions. He is a ragtime singer, and he lost a lot of money. He lost a lot of money because he started to write songs that were not politically correct. So take this moment to remind you that every Saturday night, Hoaxbusters is on Speak Free Video via Speak Free Radio, and you can see it right there Saturday night, and you scroll down.
I miss your Saturday night, and I ain't got nobody. I miss that.
Right. It's another Saturday night, and I don't remember the words. But anyway, if you get here to Hoaxbusters, all you have to do is click on, see the cute little hands here? Click on Speak Free Video, and then it will take you to Speak Free Video, right, that platform. And then we want you to spend all of your money, okay? It's just a matter of time before Dave Gahiri starts taking food stamps for the book, and I will try to encourage him to do that. Use your cute little EBT card. And here you can buy these wonderful books here. Scrolling down, you can shop here. This is the 6 DVD series. And DVD series. This is right. So you can scroll down. Some of these books: The Myth of German Villainy, Henry Ford. Keep going on and on. Exposing the Lies of History. This is a great book. And then more DVD series. And look at this cute MTP right there. This is where you can donate your $6 million to Money Tree Publishing. MoneyTreePublishing.com.
Or anyone individually.
Yes, yeah.
That's right.
Yes, and then you can donate individually to people, but Hoaxbusters is not taking donations. So with that, thank you all for joining us. We're here for another hour. And Reese, your own.
Well, thank you. And I'm going to enjoy this. It actually just started raining here. We had some pretty scary thunder and lightning here, but it looks like it's just turning into a sprinkle, thankfully. And, you know, I confronted someone, I don't know if I mentioned this, outside of a Catholic church recently, and I saw him with an easel, and he was actually protesting against the ongoing slaughter and genocide in Gaza. So that's the kind of a guy I'm going right up to, and I'm going to talk to him because, well, we're resonating on that subject, and it's very rare to see anyone, you know, these Catholics. It's not just that they're apathetic about it. They just don't want to politicize, you know, more than a Protestant even. So when I saw him there, I said, you know, I'm really impressed. Matter of fact, I've been wondering, where the Catholics are of good conscience. Well, the guy's name, Bernie, seemed like a nice guy. And I found out he actually attends that very Catholic Mass. So we had a nice conversation. And only when he brought up the Holocaust did I go there. I wasn't going to go there because I had enough to say on the unbelievable inhumanity that's taking place right now at the hand of the Israeli psychos. And so he brought it up because, you know, whenever you're going to criticize or condemn Israel for their ongoing genocide, their stated genocide, you know, a Catholic has to say, yeah, but remember, the Jews also suffered, right?
Oh, my gosh.
So I said, when did they suffer? You know, I was trying to draw him in and let him give me some bait. And he goes, well, how about in the Nazi concentration camps? I said, are you referring to the camps that were equipped with orchestras and instruments for Jews to play in those orchestras and had theaters?
And brothels.
Brothels and their own currency and a post office to mail and receive letters and a swimming pool. Are you referring to that, Auschwitz?
Yeah.
So I could see he was getting rattled when I said that, but he didn't get emotional with me yet. So I said, look, I said, here's my problem. I said, you're talking about 6 million Jews that supposedly died in these labor camps or concentration camps, but how do you explain, I could show you the census figures, not from Nazis, not from neo-Nazis, but from the World Jewish Congress and other official Jewish sources that show an 800,000 plus increase in Jews worldwide from the beginning of the war until 1945. If there was only about 20 million Jews in the whole world, there's actually less. How is that possible? From Jewish
Well, there weren't even 6 million Jews in Germany to kill at the time. I believe it was 4.5 million at the most, wasn't it?
Yeah, 4.5, right. So there weren't even that many at the disposal. So he started getting emotional. You know how they get. They start hyperventilating. Their eyes start going back and forth like they're an animal ready to run from you. And
you know
so,
why? Because you're dealing with cognitive dissonance and it's breaking their minds when you do that. I mean, we should mention that, right? They're breaking their minds because they've been under a cell always.
Uncle Henry, reserve your assessment when you hear the next chapter of how this went. So Bernie politely excuses himself when I get into the numbers, I get into the ground penetrating radar, which was being done by, I believe it was Denmark at the time. I said Scandinavians were doing it. They didn't find a single mass grave. How do you explain that if you have all these bodies that were either buried or reduced to ash? So he leads the conversation, and a much younger guy, Bernie, was older than me. He was probably in his 60s, mid-60s. But a nice disposition. The young guy comes up to me and we start talking. Well, the problem happened when I said to him, look, I said, I support what you guys are doing. Initially, I wanted to talk to him about Israel Gaza because that's what they were there about. But I said, you know, your friend got very emotional when he brought up the Holocaust. And I simply presented to him facts that are easily verifiable that completely debunk the fact that 6 million Jews died under German-occupied Germany or Poland. Some of them are in Poland during World War II. So this kid then couldn't really deal with it. So I said, look, I said, we don't need to go into that right now because I'm here because I want to speak in support of the poor, suffering people of Gaza that have no voice. Well, here's where it took a nasty turn. I said to him, first of all, are you aware that this so-called Pope, he's a New World Order imposter plant wrecking ball, Pope Francis, through his direct policies and initiatives through Catholic Charities, has flooded Europe with millions of migrant Muslim invaders, child traffickers, drug smugglers, and criminals.
Rapists. Yeah.
No, that's where I went next. So I said to him, I said, would you tell me what is worse, freedom fighters defending their country or their, it's not a country, but their territory within Israel, that's what Palestine and Gaza are, or the Pope, who is directly responsible for the mass raping of women and children throughout Europe, which is documented. Do you know what his response was? Up to that point, he was looking at me like a deer in the headlights. When I said those words, can anyone guess what his response was? You'll never guess it.
Well, he convinced hard and broke out. You kidding me?
No, it wasn't.
No.
Uncle Henry. He laughed out loud.
Really?
And I don't mean a chuckle. I mean he laughed like I had told him a funny joke. And I said, excuse me, you say you're a Catholic and you're laughing at the rape of women and children. Do I have that right? And I was looking at him straight in the eyes. I said, I don't know what kind of gospel you're following. Maybe you're going to the Church of Satan. Maybe by mistake you're here at this Catholic Church, because I can't believe you left. So you know what he does? He starts trying to defend it. Well, when somebody says, like, listen to what he said. You want to talk cognitive dissonance. He goes, when somebody says something like that, the only thing to do is laugh. Can you believe
that? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not convincing, because, you know, all the banking deplatforming that they do, why aren't they just laughing?
Well, Uncle Henry, what if I called you up and said your grandmother was just hit by a car or raped? Do you think one of the top 100 reactions would be laughter?
Probably not.
Oh,
well, it was Robbie Parker's and the whole Sandy Hook thing, wasn't it? Remember Robbie Parker came out laughing before he talked about
it? Yeah.
Yeah.
And I told you, I got a call from Gene Rosen. I don't know if I mentioned that here. I got a call on my cell phone because I was posting all over social media. I've been following Jim Fetzer, Wolfgang Halbig, and others on this obvious hoax. And so I was posting prolifically all over social media. Well, about this same time, a few days later, I'm at work. I'm in a lumber yard picking up material, and my cell phone rings. And I answer, and that it's got a Connecticut area code. That's all it said. It was Connecticut. So when I answer the phone, he doesn't say I'm Gene Rosen. But the voice, as soon as I heard the voice, it is clearly Gene Rosen on the phone. Because I have watched that video over and over and over. The exact voice cadence, voice tone, everything, it was Gene Rosen. So I knew it, but I didn't want to say it because I didn't know what he was up to. And I know how the Kahila operates, and I could be in the crosshairs, you know, for exposing this. So I wanted to find out what he knew about me and how he got my number. So I tried to keep it normal. And I said, well, he didn't say his name was Gene. He said his name was Michael. And I said, Michael, I'm just wondering, first of all, because he called under the pretext, not about my social media posts. He said, well, we have some schools up here in Connecticut that could use some reinforcing of doors, because he knows that I'm a specialist with high security doors. And he goes, I'm wondering, would you be willing to come up here and do an assessment for us? Now, I'm in New York City. He's way up in Connecticut. And there's plenty of door specialists in Connecticut. He's going to call me.
He wants you to do a special door assessment, guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Maybe it's the door leading into that chamber below the synagogue, you know, where they have those occult ritual sacrifices, possibly.
And those mattresses,
So what I say to him is, I'm still trying to extract information because my brain is racing. I mean, it's clearly Gene Rosen. The voice was unmistakably him. And then he says he's in Connecticut and that he wants me to look at some doors and security issues in the schools. Would I be willing to come up there? I knew he was telling me, we know who you are and we're letting you know we know who you are. Now I say to him, Michael, I didn't call him Gene. I said, Michael, Can I ask you where you got my phone number from? Because I'm not even listed anywhere outside of the New York City area.
I was just going to ask that very question.
You know,
I imagine you don't just drop your number off on any old Tom, Dick, and Larry's forum, right? So,
no, are you kidding?
Right.
Uncle Murray, here's what happened. He told me, now this shows you how organized Jewry operates. I got your name from the New York City Housing Authority, which is one of the customers I do work with. Now, what that means, there is simply no way somebody from Connecticut is going to dial a number to NYCHA and they're going to get my cell phone number. There is no way, because I'm of small potatoes. They've got hundreds and hundreds of vendors. Who gave him my number? I think he reached out to somebody in the Cahilla, did whatever search they could do based on my social media, extracting who I was, maybe coming up with a name and approximate location. I lived in New York City. And then from that, called the city agency to find out who I was and got my number. So that really sent chills. And he was trying to get me to come up there. He wouldn't, because I just basically tried to politely dismiss it by saying, look, I've got a lot of work here. I don't travel much outside of like a 20 mile radius, no less 150 miles from New York City. I said, maybe you should call somebody locally. He kept on trying to get me to come up there.
Hmm.
Yep.
So, Reese, excuse me, what is a Cahilla?
Well, that's a term the Jews use. That is basically their, you know, like B'nai B'rith is Jewish occult. You know, it's a free secret society. Well, the Kahilla is the group of presiding Jews in any particular area that oversee the network of Jewish synagogues, B'nai B'rith, and other occult activities, secret societies, whatever, of the Jews. The Kahilla is like a collaboration. It's like, let's think mafia dons.
A congregation, right?
But it's organized crime, and that is operating probably under a 501c3. I bet you they're getting government grant money, you know, for doing it. But
Sure. We're paying. Yep. This sucker pays, of course.
Okay, right. So it's spelled K-E-H-I-L-L-A.
I believe it's K-A, but I've seen it spelled
No,
with
it's K-E.
K-E,
oh,
is
I have
it?
K, it's is K-E it? In, I put it that way, but this is what I came up with in, so it's K-E-H-I-L-L-A, and it says here we have them in Brookline. Where are we got going on here? So Brookline is basically heavy Jewish area of right outside of Boston. So look, we have all this Cahilla. Who knew?
Well, let me give an example of how the Cahilla operates. Back in 1910, Israel Cohen went public exposing to the world the plot of Jews that had just come over. They were under Marxist leadership, under Karl Marx, first in London, and then they brought them over here. Israel Cohen was approached by them and was asked if he would be part of their plan to basically carry on a cultural revolution in America. What they didn't realize is Israel Cohen, like Myron Fagan, who he had confided in and that encouraged him to go public with this information, was what you would call a righteous Jew. There are Jews that are not part of this network of organized Jewry. They are not Zionist, and they would not go along with
any plots. But he was a Zionist. Israel Cohen was a Zionist, right?
Yes, but Israel Cohen went to Myron Fagan and approached. Maybe I didn't state it correctly. Israel Cohen approached Myron Fagan.
Okay.
And he and his fellow collaborators tried to bring Myron Fagan in because Fagan was a playwright.
Okay.
They wanted to get him to produce the play, The Melting Pot, so that would be their first attack on American whites. to guilt them into feeling guilty over the plight of blacks in America. And Myron Fagan then went on to produce recordings that he actually made in 78 records that people around the country would go to public meetings and play it. And Myron Fagan was very well informed and very eloquent. This guy's a great speaker. You can still hear him on YouTube or BitChute. And he exposed the plot of these, you know, Marxists. And so the reason I bring that up is that after Myron Fagan had blown the whistle, and this went pretty much viral because other Catholics at the time, Father Fahey, for instance, had started speaking about it and talking about this plot of the Jews and basically to misogynize the white race, to weaponize the black community and to guilt whites into silence. So here's
a good thing. Excuse me, Reese. It's a good. Yes. It's a good thing it didn't work.
Yeah, just like a lead balloon, huh?
Anyway, keep going.
Well, here's how the Kahilla works, and I found this out because I used to research these topics when I did my own webcast. So I started researching the Project for New American Century. Well, it was a predecessor. That was, of course, a different, even more sinister plot. This was a racial plan for America in the 20th century. So he produced a book after Myron Fagan, or at the same time, Fagan was the whistleblower, was going public, and this had gone viral. It wasn't just in New York. This had gone right to the West Coast. You know, here's how the Kahilla went to work. Organized Jewry put out the word to get every copy of that Israel Cohen book off the bookshelves, out of school libraries, out of university libraries, and anywhere else there were copies. And you know something? It was extremely difficult to get a copy of that book because of this. The Jews, I mean, this book was printed in the thousands. They went around like the Grinch that stole Christmas and took all those books to cover their tracks. Do you want me to give you another example of the Kahilla that precedes this?
So Reese, you're saying that they took a book, they were trying to eliminate a book that was written by Israel Cohen or from written by Myron Fagan?
No, Israel Cohen, because Myron Fagan had blown the cover. So the plot of these communists to propagandize using, you know, that it was before film. We're talking before film came out. They were using plays, and this was the one play, The Melting Pot, was the play that they were using to guilt Americans into accepting, you know, guilt for the blacks and allow them to race mix with your daughter, etc. They removed those books, and I had read from sources even back at that time that you could not find a copy of that book anywhere. And they were selling copies of like $1,000, you know, equivalent back then, because no one had copies of it. They were so rare to get. And I've seen them do this even back in the 1800s when it was, matter of fact, I brought this up to Dave Gahari this week. I said there was a false rumor that was circulated by Samuel Morse. This rumor has been published by agents of disinformation such as John Eric Phelps and Edmund Paris and Chinnike in their books. And here's what the lie is that they published. That George Washington said while he was at a church in Boston with two men present that he could name, that if America is ever to fall, it will be at the hands of the Jesuits, because in every country they have gone, they have sown discord. They've been a state within a state, you know, et cetera. You know, that the Jesuits were the evil warning America. But I knew what George Washington's original quote was, and so did a bishop back around 1870-ish, around 1870s. called Bishop Spaulding of Kentucky. And that bishop had taken Samuel Morse to task and said, what are you talking about? The Jesuits, not the Jews, the Jesuits are the ones that are causing revolutions, corrupting morals, overturning Christian monarchies and all other kind of evils. Really? Would you like to provide confirmation? I want to have a debate with you. And he challenged him. They had a letter writing debate that went on for months back and forth. Well, I have a transcript of that debate. At the end, what happened was Samuel Morse would not produce the names of those two men. And we found out why. Well, the reason was, is because, I'll tell you one thing about these Catholic priests, you know, the informed ones, like or an E. Michael Jones or a Father Fahey or Father McCullough. These guys do their homework. They're well-educated, and they know how to research. And this man, even before the internet came out, did his due diligence, and he actually went to Boston. And somebody calling me here. Hold on. I can't. Hold on.
Let's just stop the show, but I want to pull this up. Reese, hold on a second, Reese.
Hold on. The kid that I mentioned is calling me. I'll text him.
I'm going to pull this up, and you can see if you just put into an internet search, this is Google, Israel Cohen melty pot, right? And you can look at this one. Israel Cohen tells Fagan of his follow-up about the melting pot. And if you go down here, you can see it's on the Chabad.org website.
Wow.
Jaime Cohen, I guess, an American immigrant who made it big in business, wanted to blend in with his Gentile associates, right? So he applied his commie garbage. But if you could just go on and on, and you can see this. Now, I clicked on this up here where it says Israel Cohen tells of Marvin Fagan.
I'm going to need to zero in. Let me zoom in with my other phone because I'm actually on a cell phone right now. But if I zoom in, I might be able to. Oh, shit. The lens.
So here's I'll just say.
This phone has a crappy camera on it.
That's right. Because this, what's interesting about this is it says here's documentary proof of the beginning of the deliberate plot to foment the Negroes into all their lawlessness. This is, I actually listened to this, so you can find this if you just put in Myron Fagan. But it's interesting when you go down here, right? It has a YouTube link, and when you click it on, it's gone. Oh, no, it's gone. Video unavailable. Video is no longer available.
Yeah, I'll find it. I'll put it up later tonight, guys.
Yeah, no, but he did talk about this, Myron Fagan did. But you can look the melting pot, and they take a lot of pride in the fact that America is this wonderful melting pot.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Reese, back to our regular program.
Yeah, so what happened was Israel Cohen was commissioned through Marx. He was a disciple of Karl Marx, along with George Bernard Shaw, I believe it was. George, was it Shaw? And Israel Zangwill. The three of them came over to implement cultural Marxist, you know, the beginning of the revolution here in America. And they were given the task of guilting American whites and convincing whites to intermarry with blacks. And that's the famous statement by Israel Cohen, that when we will beat into the psyche of the blacks that they have been persecuted by the whites for centuries, while at the same time propounding into the minds of the whites a guilt complex for the perceived wrongs to the blacks, and so that we will get whites and blacks, will bring blacks into sports and entertainment so that they'll begin intermarrying with whites. And they said this will fit right into our communist program for America.
Yeah, it's one of the steps of the Clary Plan.
But it didn't work.
No, really.
Well, failed miserably.
I'm going to tell you something. And I've said this before because my expertise, I know my history, I know the conspiracies, but my expertise is in the occult, secret societies, and the origins of the New World Order conspiracy. And I'm going to tell you something. When you look at the degree of achievement of success with plans that stretch back centuries, it's stunning. I mean, how other can you explain it? How otherwise than they are being guided by superhuman entities? And no, I don't believe they're ETs from the Orion complex or the Pleiades. I believe they're demons. And I used to say at the beginning of my webcast, I used to give a brief overview of the New World Order. And to, just to encapsulate it, I would say that the I've been tracking the tracks of this serpent from the days of their Babylonian captivity after God sent the Assyrians to sack Jerusalem and to punish them for giving sacrifices to Molech and other abominations. And that's where their origins were. But while they were in Babylonian captivity, they became even more corrupted with the mysticism and occultism of Babylon. And so from that period, they then, we find them at the time of Jesus, they reappear as the Pharisees and the Sadducees, who Jesus condemned, flatly condemned them. But the story doesn't stop there, because after they rejected their Messiah and never repented of it, the temple was destroyed, as predicted, as Jesus said in 70, the temple was destroyed and they were dispersed throughout Europe to later be intermixed with these Turkish Mongols in ancient Khazaria and in Turkey and in other places where their Messiah then appears. Now we're going into the 17th century in 1666, where they now announce as their Messiah Sabbatai Zevi, the satanic inverted Jewish Messiah of 1666. And then his disciple, Jacob Frank, collaborates with who I refer to as the Holy Trinity. Jacob Frank, Adam Weishaupt, and Meyer Amschel Rothschild in Frankfurt, Germany, who in 1776 enter into a secret pact to overturn all Christian monarchies and basically wage war against Christian civilization and bring about a dystopian, inverted fulfillment of the promises made to Abraham, where they would rule with an iron fist, a tyranny, a dictatorship over mankind. And I said, that's what we have now with these imposter Jews. They're corrupted probably beyond redemption. I believe also, I would say that they entered into a pact. The devil offered Christ all the kingdoms of the world if you would bow and do an act of worship before me. I believe the devil made a visible manifestation before these collaborators and probably their occult group that they were meeting with. And I believe they entered into a pact with the devil to be given success, secret, scientific knowledge, foreknowledge, etc. If they would be loyal, you know, to the devil, if they would give their loyalty and swear loyalty to him. That's it in a nutshell, right, folks.
Yeah. So let me just, I just want to chime in. Thank you for that, Reese. I just want to show you that here's a, you could go to this YouTube, actually. It looks like it's on YouTube, I think. Is this YouTube?
They no, wouldn't it have isn't. A website like
this
that.
This is not. No, I'm sorry. This is a
they
website.
Have a video,
sorry, I was
though.
Looking at something else. But so from this is the Illuminati and the Council on Foreign Relations. You can listen to Myron Fagan in his own words. And what's interesting, I would just want to point this out. Reese, I'm going to just, our country, I got a text from somebody. I'm not going to say who it is, okay? About our founding fathers, and you know who I'm talking about when I say
I
just got a text from
Jefferson. Okay.
Yes. Okay. So they were Masons, right?
Yes.
It's based on what I now know, what I feel like I know, our country was not founded on what we think it was founded on.
Yeah.
Right. We were just an extension of the bankers. That's all right. We were. We weren't founded on this freedom. I don't even believe that the Constitution was written to benefit the people. I don't.
Oh, my
so,
God.
So, what?
Wait a minute. You're saying the document that's been heralded as the greatest constitution ever given to any nation in the annals of history is the work of Satan.
That, I didn't say that.
No, well,
what I said is...
Well, I'll say this.
Wait, let me finish. Let me finish. What I said is it was not written to benefit the we, the people. It was not.
It was for
it
the
was not.
The
so,
rich.
So the other question I have is, look how far these people have gotten, right? Reese, you just said it, right? We look how far they've gotten. Again, I'll go back to voting. If anybody thinks that voting is not just a ruse, with all what we just talked about and how far they've gotten, something's not right if you think that your vote that your vote does anything but waste your time. That's all I'm saying.
Well, let me speak on that. First of all, you're right about the Constitution. I want to say, though, I would say that the Articles of Confederation were probably a more honest document.
Yes. Good right? point. Yeah.
Now, see, remember they did the bait and switch, right, with the 13th Amendment that they eventually took out altogether, right?
Good point. Because that very good point. Yeah.
Amendment had penalties if you win against a country, if you commit treason. Okay, and that got stripped out in between being Article of Confederation and being in the Constitution, right? That happened. Now,
they're already like 50 or 100 or 200 years ahead of us. Could it just be that that's how they started it to make it look like that? And they had this plan all along?
Well, yes, because that's how they work, of course, right? They've been working for centuries, just like Reese, just like everyone.
Can I interject here? I have to interject here.
Yes.
I think your statement has got a lot of truth in it, Uncle Murray, but I think what you're missing, you may be missing this point. Here's their MO, and they follow it all the time going back centuries. They don't create anything. They infiltrate and corrupt.
Right. Yes.
That is what they did with the Articles of Confederation when they produced the Constitution and added the 14th Amendment, which was their foot in the door. That allowed them, of course, when they formed the county in D.C., Washington, D.C., so they could then carry on their malfeasance, basically circumventing what was written in the Constitution. But in any case, I believe what they did is they were wringing their hands. They were watching, you know, this breakaway group from England and saying, look, like when we go fishing, let the fish run for a while. Let him think he's free because that fish is on the line. Let him go. And then we're going to bring him in and we're going to do it gradually to weaken him. And I believe that's what they did by their agents. And, of course, one of them was Alexander Hamilton. And they made sure Hamilton was part of the Constitutional Congress, you know, to the convention, I should say.
Right.
So, and by the way, let me say this about Freemasonry, because there's a lot of this stuff going around where people haven't really looked in depth. Like they'll hear George Washington was a Freemason. But I've done more in-depth research into George Washington. And what you're going to find out is this. Washington's own words, that he was an honorary Freemason. The Freemasons, were so impressed with George Washington. Remember, Marquis de Lafayette said he was so impressed with General George Washington that he not only fought along with him in the Revolutionary War, but he said his character should be considered the eighth wonder of the world. That's how great this man's mind was and his morals. So Washington was given an honorary 33rd degree. He said in his own writings, you could read in his writings, he said, I had not stepped into a Masonic lodge in like 25 or 30 years. He'd never attended it. And also, if you read about Washington, he got up every morning at 4 a.m. and spent 1 hour in prayer and Bible study. Now, this is not what a member of the, you know, Albert Pike's Scottish Rite Freemason group would be doing, or Benign Brith, or some other occult group like Knights of the Golden Circle. there's many things about Washington that would prove. In other words, you could say, oh, you're just saying that because Washington said he's never been in a Freemasonic lodge, and he was given a honorary Masonic title. No, it's Washington's actions and the words of some of the greatest men, such as Marquis de Lafayette at that time, that affirmed that this man was no moral degenerate, as was those that belong to the Hellfire Club, for instance. You know, so I just want to bring out that one nuance. A lot of people like throwing it around. Well, George Washington, see, it was all Freemasons. Washington was a Freemason. It was all Freemasons. This whole thing has right from the beginning been a plot from the Jews, and it wasn't. What they did is they infiltrated it through the Masonic Lodge. That's why in 1815, they had Albert Pike and Mazzini in Italy start putting together the higher levels of masonry, because it's those higher levels that allowed the Jews to infiltrate America's masonry, and then, of course, appoint men that they would test. They would find out if they were a real scumbag, and if you were, and of course you had a brilliant mind, we would invite you in. And so that's what the Masonic Lodge was there for. But right. Going back to Washington now, let's just go back for a minute on that comment that was attributed to Washington, which was proved a lie by Archbishop Spalding in his letter-writing debate with Samuel Morse, who I believe was a puppet of the Jews. But that's not important to go into that right now, because he called out Samuel Morse and said,
hello.
I went to Boston, and I spoke to people that were present that day at that church when you say George Washington made this comment in the presence of Lafayette, that if the America was ever to fall, it'll be at the hand of those Jesuits, you know? And he said, I have people there that say that that never took place. Who are these men that you could bring forward? And Samuel Morse never would, and that's how that debate ended. Now, I got a copy of the original, I believe it's the writings of Washington. What was it in... it was a very old book from George Washington. It's very hard to find. I think that's another one the Kahilla got rid of so they could smear Washington and no one would be able to look it up. If you go to that book, which I actually got a copy online, you could see that Washington said in that quote that it is the Jews. If America is ever to fall, it's at the hand of the Jews. And on about they've been a malicious and malignant influence in Europe, whatever they, just like Benjamin Franklin said in his address at the Constitutional Congress. So I think a lot of people are taken in.
But he wasn't the only one. Weren't there others, though? Weren't there others?
Yes, there
were. He wasn't, he wasn't the only one.
Yeah, but right? My only point is the founding father of America was not some kind of a cryptic Freemason that was cynically putting together a constitution just to snooker people. I mean, it's absurd. When you look at these men, their character, people that give, firsthand accounts of their character, like Lafayette, you cannot dismiss this. And then you go
Well, it's very simple. Patrick, you can speak for us in a second. The Constitution, if it's being wielded correctly, wouldn't allow for all these excesses by these scumbags, would it?
You're right. It wouldn't.
I don't know, but do you really think the Constitution is written for the people?
If you read the preamble. People.
Yeah,
well, I
don't know if I believe it. I can sing the preamble for you if you want. I don't know. I think differently.
It? I mean,
we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, establish
our
domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty, to ourselves and our posterity to ordain. Okay, I can keep going. United States, not for the people. I don't think it's for the people.
I wanted to ad lib. I missed an opportunity to ad lib. Provide the general welfare.
I know. Yes. I should ask a
right. America, that's what I'm saying.
Not illegal
that's what I'm
migrant
saying.
Invaders from the third world.
I know,
world.
But let's bring Patrick in because Patrick always has something good to add. Patrick,
hey,
you're
Patrick.
Hello. Yeah. I just wonder, like, when did the Jews take over the Freemasons? Because it seems like that question has been up in the air since the beginning, you know? Since the Masons' beginning, it's kind of questionable.
Well,
I'd say, Patrick, the answer is right there in the beginning because they infiltrate bloodlines. So
and the British,
the very beginning.
The British had Freemasons running all the way through its government. The British government from practically its beginning, at least from the beginning of America.
Royal Arch Masonry in England did not have the higher level Luciferian degrees. Those that came later.
How do we know, though?
Well, we know history. You could read the history of it. I mean, I researched Masonry for years. I've read the documents. I have a copy of Edith Starr Miller's book, Occult Theocracy, that has actual source documents in there, including pages from Masonic Lodge registries.
It seems interesting how the British are always used by the Jews to get what they want. You know, whether it's Israel, because it was the British mandate before it became Israel. They went in and took it over from the Germans. America, they came in, the British fought the French in the French and Indian War. And got the French, you know, they killed the king, the Masons did, of France during the French Revolution, using the Masons with the British help. And then lo and behold, the Masons came in and they started their own American government here in America. And we still had French people who were loyal to France.
That was a broad statement there. It was a broad transition. And then the Masons came here and started their own kind of, how did we get there? From the French Revolution.
You're talking. We're talking about the Masonic involvement in the founding of America,
or the infiltration. Right. Yeah, the infiltration.
Yeah, well,
like there.
I see. I don't know. I don't know if I understand what you're saying, Reese, and I appreciate that you did a lot of research, but I feel like America was created on a ruse, on a lie. I still believe it. Yeah. Nothing's going to convince me otherwise.
I know, Reese, there was
Diana. Believes is irrelevant. What matters is what are the facts? Because we could this and that, but it's a matter of what do the facts support.
But I don't
the
know
First
that your
Amendment.
Facts are true. I don't know that your facts are true, Reese.
Well, how's
like
that?
Reese, I don't know that
Marquis de Lafayette did not visit America and become personally acquainted with George Washington and describe his character as the eighth wonder of the world. Is that the fact that you disagree with?
I know, but here's the thing. Just because he said that doesn't mean he was being honest. It doesn't.
Oh, my God.
I don't
go there, my dear. I don't go there.
But I know you don't. But the thing is, Reese, you still believe in voting. Despite all of this, you still believe. No.
You don't?
Are you out of mind?
You're not participating, and if you don't participate, you have no right to gripe. Let Massachusetts be one of the illegals.
It already is.
Yeah, but if you're not voting,
Right. See, this is where we differ. We are past voting. Reese, we are so far past our vote counting.
Okay,
and what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that?
It creates a fatalistic outlook.
Who said it was fatalistic? What? So I'd rather be fatalistic than be delusional. I'm just saying.
I want to be realistic.
I am being realistic.
Why would they wait? Why would they expend all the energy that they? Why would they expend all the energy that they have for the last 8 years to dissuade us from voting for who we want for?
No, except, but remember, it's part of the game. It's a ruse. Right. It's a ruse to keep you busy.
Of course it is.
That's all it is.
Of course it is.
It's a ruse.
Of course it is.
Here's what I think is interesting. No, Reese, no, time out. My turn to talk.
Ahead. All right, go ahead.
Here's what we learned in 2020. This is the most hysterical thing. In 2020, They stole the vote. It was stolen. Yes. No, it wasn't.
It was completely ripped off.
It was not stolen. It was not stolen. They showed us what they have been doing for who knows how long. And then in 2022, when no voting machines were removed from any city or town across this country, all I heard was the red wave. And I said to all kinds of people, how do you think that they just showed you in 2020 what they do with voting, that they can control it? So, Reese, I don't know how much more information you need.
Right.
They control everything.
What is your point in that, Diana?
Here's the point, Reese. They control every aspect. They control every aspect of our lives except for voting. Except for voting. Yeah, they don't control voting, but they control the media. They control education. They control the hospitals. They control everything, but they don't control voting.
That's true, Diana.
It is true.
If that's true,
it is an absolute
question. How did Donald Trump get in on his first term?
Oh, my freak.
Let me tell you what. Landslide of votes.
Really? Really?
That's the easy part.
With Barack Obama for 8 years.
Listen. Okay.
The game too.
Wait a minute. Did we just agree that they're 50 or 100 years ahead of us? Let's just agree they're 10 years ahead of us. Let's just say 10 years. Can we all agree on that? Okay. Okay. Yeah. So, okay. Let me think. They did COVID. If Hillary had gotten into office instead of Trump, would these conservative Republicans, aka mostly white people, take a COVID shot willingly? No, they wouldn't. So what they did is they had to put Trump in. They had to get people to trust him. They had to show people that he would give them things that no other person would give for freedom. And then, bam, Operation Warp Speed. If that had been Hillary, none of those people would have taken these shots. That's why they did it. They put him in office.
That's
right. Wait a minute. You're saying that the Jews would have not gone through with fulfilling Protocol 10 to kill us off to inoculation if Hillary was president?
That's not what I said.
There would have been more upheaval against it.
Exactly. Exactly. So let me repeat what I said, what Diana said. Diana said that these white people, conservatives, Republicans, would have not taken the COVID shot had it been pushed out of the mouth of Hillary Clinton. Okay?
No, but they would have. They would have lost their job.
They wouldn't have. They were taking the shot before the job mandates. They were taking the shot because Trump was out there. Operation Warp Speed
came out. We just had that thing go viral, Fauci's statement from the congressional inquiry, where he says we're going to make things so painful and uncomfortable that they'll forget their conspiracy theories and take the jab. And I'm telling you, from my personal knowledge, people will.
The job thing didn't start until August, September, October of 21. But Trump supporters were already taking the shot because they trusted Trump.
I think it is true. I know a lot of people who voted for Trump that then went along with the whole masking thing.
Yep, they
let alone the warp speed
vaccine. No, but they didn't vote for Trump. They trusted him.
Older people. Really? Reese, I had the largest Trump group in the state.
They didn't do it because they trusted Trump. They didn't want to lose their job.
You're not listening, Reese.
Time out, Reese.
Those mandates didn't come until August, September, October of 21. That's when the job mandates came out. They were taking the shot because of Trump. This is what I know. This is what I've done.
Let's do this. So, I'm not going to comment any further on that. We'll just agree to disagree on that point.
That's
it's not important. It's not germane to the discussion that we were having.
It is germane because voting, if the Jews control everything but voting, Patrick, I want to hear from you, Patrick. Patrick,
if the Jews control everything, answer me this question. Answer me this question. If the Jews control everything, how did Roe v. Wade get overturned? If the
on
Jews
purpose,
control everything.
On purpose to make people think. Reese.
You're serious?
Well, I believe
it's
that.
Public relations.
Now it's almost like if I'm going to say if the Jews got rounded up, you would say that was a Jewish plan too. If we rounded them up and shipped them to Siberia,
make them look like Reese. Victims.
Reese.
Excuse
me, it's 9:49, and Patrick really hasn't been able to talk. Patrick,
go ahead.
What? I don't know. I'm just enjoying your back and forth.
The,
it's good
the banter.
I agree with you though. I supported Trump in 2016. I was making phone calls, getting people excited to vote. I went up to Duluth, and I went and shook his hand and everything. And I was in the glow of the whole moment. And then he went after he was elected. They had the recount here in Wisconsin. And I remember being taken and I went to the recount. I was in Russia, actually, in the lead up to it. I was over there for about 3 months, and then I came back to vote. And I went to the recount, and I saw what they were doing. They were taking the rolls of ballots, and they were cutting them to pieces, into individual ballots, and putting them in envelopes. And then they were shipping them off. You know, if you want to keep the voting rolls, if you want to keep the voting rolls to the point where they're intact and you know that it's legitimate, you're not going to cut them apart and make it easy for people to steal the votes and the ballots away. And that's what they were doing. There was some shady stuff going on there.
Yeah.
And that's when I said, there's something funny about this whole voting thing. And,
well, the mail-in ballots because of the COVID.
Right, but isn't a lot
Well, that was 2020. Yeah.
Yes.
But isn't a lot of
Reese, we're getting a lot of noise.
Yeah, isn't it a lot of this stuff done electronically? And when it's electronic,
that's what I mean. They were electronic.
They can do whatever they want.
Yeah, that's true.
They can do whatever they want.
That's why you got to get that crap out of there. Take those machines out. No, they're all hackable.
Even when they print them out, is what I'm saying. Even when the machines print them out, they were taking the ballot rolls. They were in a big roll that the printer would just print it out in a roll, and then the next one, and the next one, and they were all on a big scroll. But they were cutting them into individual ballots so that they could then put them in an envelope and disappear them, is what it seemed to me.
Right.
Or, you know, they could have very easily done that. And
some kind of chicanery. Right.
Yeah. And at that point I said, well, this is fixed. I don't like this.
Sports games.
Yeah. But I was still, you know, I was still willing to give Trump a chance. You know, it was like, wow, this guy, okay, yeah, he's not Hillary. I think that's the biggest reason that I got excited about it, because I did not want that woman in there. Yeah. You know, that she's evil. Killing Gaddafi and all that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, what does Trump do when he gets into office? He starts bombing Syria.
Yeah.
That's when I said, no way, I'm no longer for this man, and this is not anything that I want to be a part of. Well,
he didn't bomb Syria.
He condoned it. He condoned it.
No. He was snookered.
He could have been against it. He condoned it.
But you know what I think is interesting?
Yeah, but I think that's a bit naive when you look at Jewish power.
I know, but everybody says he was snooked into it. He got the wrong people were telling him, giving him the wrong information. They were lying to him. That goes to show you that the president doesn't do jack shit.
Yeah.
They don't do anything. They don't make make any decisions on their own. They're just puppets. That's all they are.
Follow the money.
They're figureheads. They're all figureheads. Right? Yeah. There are people working them like puppets. That's the thing. President, the most powerful man in the country, he's a puppet, you know?
Right, they all are puppets. The thing is, they're all placed there. And if you're paying attention to politics, you're not paying attention to the other stuff around you. And all it is a freaking circus. That's all it is.
They want you. They want you glued to CBS, ABC, NBC. You know,
waiting
the three
for
main.
The drama to unfold.
Yeah. All right, Reese. I'm sorry, I had to mute you, Reese, because I can hear your background noise, and it's hard to hear. Okay, Miss Diane, did you want to give us an update on Jim?
He, like I said, in short, he is having lines terminated, pulled. He is still in ICU because they want to see how the chest tube removal is going to affect him. He has a little bit of clouding around his heart and chest X-ray, and so they've given him a diuretic. They believe that that's liquid. They want to try to extract that liquid. Once they do that, he should be able to, his breathing should be better. His oxygen saturation should be better. Right now he's on oxygen and he doesn't go too much above 95. And we're supposed to go above 95 without oxygen. And so anyway, they're trying to see how that's going to work out. Tomorrow they want to transfer him to the cardiac floor and start preparing him for discharge, it looks like. I think Diana has said that whenever, and others have said, whenever someone goes in the hospital, they're always starting, they're preparing them for discharge from that point. And they do what they need to do to get the problem resolved and then to get them in a position where they can, live on their own. Jim will probably do the same thing he did before when he had the first CABG, the bypass, was to, he went home and then he basically, I helped take care of him, Joe to some extent, but he basically did everything himself. He did his own PT. He would do the walking he needed to do. He resented the nurses coming in because they kept trying to shove the medications down his throat. They don't seem to do that at this hospital. And if he doesn't want to do something, they don't force him to. They don't extort him to do this. So, but you would never get this from him because as all patients, they probably only look at, I want to get back to some semblance of the way I was without the pain. So any progress is going to be just ignored. But we don't mind telling him the progress as he's made a horrendous amount of progress in the past 24 hours.
No, he's doing terrific. And
he's in my prayers.
Thank you, I'm everybody, for joining us.
James had a bypass surgery.
Quadruple bypass.
Yes. Wow.
Yeah.
We're going to close because we're going to run out of time. I just want to thank Speak Free Radio, Speak Free Video, Dave Gahiri, and MoneyTreePublishing.com. So go to MoneyTreePublishing.com. Buy the books. Use your EBT card and put in the word HOX and get 10%
H-O-A-X,
off.
HOX, yes.
Excuse me, HOX and get 10%. Get 10% off your books. So we're going to close with this wonderful song by Goyim Goddess. Have a great night. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, Diana.
Thank you, guys.
Love you guys. Night, yep, here we go.
The chance to leave the country, Jews chose wealth and property, destroying the German nation, Zyklon D. And in those heated work camps, they had plenty of amenities, but still they were kvetching Zyklon B. Zyklon B, Zyklon B. Zyklon B, Zyklon B, only used for pest control, Zyklon B. And when they use the post office, theater, swimming pool, and dentistry, they were still ungrateful, Zyklon B. For though the Allies found out, it was 4 years of wait and see. Refused to bomb the train tracks, such trickery. Zyklon B, Zyklon B, Zyklon B, Zyklon B. Never was a gas shower you can see. Zyklon B, Zyklon B, Zyklon B, Zyklon B. Only used for pest control, Zyklon B.
It's going to be another show.
Oh my God, swallowing these diamonds is so difficult. I have gluten intolerance and they're making me eat fresh baked bread. We didn't get to do Fiddler on the Roof for this week's play. My mattress is too stiff. Zyklon B, Zyklon B, Zyklon B, Zyklon B. Only used for pest control, Zyklon B. And then they brought in Hollywood.